Talk delivered in March 2006 on the occasion of the seminar, "We Should Attempt the Finite for the Infinite," printed in Bodhyanti Parasparam, Volume 5, Chapter 10.
The sentence from the message of the Master, Sri Ramchandra Ji Maharaj, titled "Dynamic Path of Raj Yoga," delivered at Bangalore on 23-12-64, covers a very vital aspect of the sadhana in PAM. It may be considered as a summary of the entire philosophy of PAM in one sentence. This is my single observation about this sentence, that if you want to tell the entire system in one sentence, if anybody asks us, we have to say, "We should attempt the finite for the infinite." Just as Vivekananda said, in one sentence when he was asked to summarize, he said that, "Enough is enough." Hinduism means enough is enough. In one sentence we try to summarize, the whole concepts are merged there. In fact, the whole message raises, one more sentence I forgot there, this may be treated as an aphorism similar to Vedanta Sutras. That is, Vyasa has written Brahma Sutras, I would say this is a sentence similar to that. In fact, the whole message raises many aspects of the problem that we face in life and identifies and gives a solution to them. Before we discuss the meaning and relevance of the sentence, it is necessary to know clearly the problem that is being addressed by the Master. In the beginning of the message, Master stated, "Our ancients, when they peeped into it, went direct to find the ultimate cause of the world, the relation between man and God, the static and dynamic values of things representing nature." He further stated, "They even went beyond everything, which has resulted in the discovery of some movements being the cause of the existence. When we go to the extent, we find the center and its region giving us the knowledge of their existence." These vibrations I mentioned here are not any philosophical statements. It is what you feel in the human frame above the sahasra. It's a fact. It's an experiential fact. That's why we should know that. And our ancient sages, Babaji says, have tried to go into it. Further, he made a statement, "We see everything tending towards the center and the center itself yawning towards the circumference," a concept which I will be later developing to make us understand the concept of interdependence between God and us. Continuing, he stated, "After our adventure, we initiated the value of our existence and felt the cooperation of the higher power around us." Continuing in the same vein, he asserted that this has resulted in our knowing the main theme that is being played. Then he announces how the central region was opened up by our gradually knowing the function of the movement of the human body. He avers that when we visualized ourselves, we found that man is an epitome of the universe. This added to our advancement, and we have begun to study our own centers, their motions and work, and the functions of the human body. He informs us that owing to the sacred pledge of our ancestors, we avoided destructive purposes and we utilize the power of the transformation for the transformation of man. He states later in the message that when we peep into ourselves with this idea, we find the higher centers focusing into our centers, but due to our wrong thinking and doings, the effect is not coming in at all. He specifies the problem by stating, "Thus spirituality is attacked by many of us," giving examples of the present day civilizations and of those who have gone with unlimited pace of materialism, making themselves as limited because they are tempted for only the finite and afterwards they fall off. The idea should be to proceed from the finite to the infinite. It should be the idea that we should also make the finite to be merged into the infinite. He, raising the point, "What is finiteness?" clarifies that the center in us has lost the capacity of grasping the infinite. Thus he asserts that once we gain the capacity to know our own infiniteness, the problem is solved. My point here, which I have not discussed down below, is just now Raghu also asked the same question, "What is finite?" When we don't know our real nature, the center in us doesn't understand the infinite character, we become finite. We are not limited, we are infinite. This is the fundamental truth again that the Atman is Brahman. There are not two entities, only one. He asserts that this can be best introduced by those who have imbibed the real characteristic within their own centers, who know how to draw in the power and piety from the higher centers to the lower ones, and who can transmit the effect into the Abhyasi so that they may adopt the same character. He pleads with us to ponder over this. We find here the seeds of the system of PAM sown deep and firm. It is necessary that we understand what we mean by the words finite and infinite. At this point of time, as far as I know, we really do not understand either of the terms, and scientists and cosmologists are deeply engaged in educated guesses, arguments, complex calculations, construction of models and invention and revision of theories and speculations. The cosmologists are definitely undecided, and there is no consensus. The problem stated from one of the points of theory of numbers in mathematics may be stated as: there is an infinite number of even numbers. There is also an infinite number of odd numbers. There is also an infinite number of natural numbers. Now, are these three infinite the same object, or the group in C is more than the other two infinites? Natural numbers, which include both even and odd, are there more, that infinity is more compared to these two infinites? This problem is not posed by me, it is there. This problem was stated by Galileo, and I presented it as I understood the problem. I am no mathematician, as you all know. There are many other classical paradoxes of the infinite, but Galileo's is enough for our discussion. The infinite has been a perennial source of mathematical and philosophical wonder, in part because of its enormity. Anything large is grand and provokes awe and contemplation, and in part because of the paradoxes like Galileo's. Infinity seems impossible to tame intellectually and to bring within the confines of human understanding. This problem, or similar problems of metaphysics and physics and mathematics, is not what Master is talking about, and that's what I would request Raghavan to understand. That much only I would like to understand. But it is not what Master was talking about. I understand that Master was taking the simple position that finite means human being along with all that is created, and infinite means God, the power behind everything. The concept of God asserts that God is the power behind all existence. God is at once finite and infinite. He is space, and as such he is measured. He is beyond space, and therefore he is measureless. He is boundless, he is infinite. God is infinite consciousness, infinite bliss. Yet he can also assume the finite form. He is infinite, he is finite. And at the same time, he transcends both the infinite and the finite. He is life, he is death. Yet again he is beyond both life and death. God is boundless, and in the field of manifestation, he takes all forms, from that of a tiny insect to that of a large elephant. Many people cannot agree with the idea that God can be a finite. But if he cannot be a finite, there is a limitation on him, that he cannot be a finite, and that would be a blemish. But let us think of one of the God's divine qualities called omnipresence. According to our human feeling, when we think of omnipresence, we immediately think of vastness. True, he is as vast as the world. But because he is in everything, God also can also be finite. Again, God is omnipotent. Where is his omnipotence if he cannot become a small child, a tiny insect, or an atom? He can be vast, he can be infinitesimal. There is a peculiar problem God has. He cannot perceive. He knows, but does not know that he knows. This is what Master said when he said that God has no mind. It is we, the Homo sapiens, that provide all the senses to him. With our exquisitely developed powers of cognition and cognitive perception, we lend him with our capacity to question and understand, to reflect. It is because we and not God are Homo sapiens, the creatures that do know and know that they know. This is the reason why God cannot do anything on his own, but he has to depend on the humans to express him. This is an interdependency that is absolute, and neither the human nor the God can manage without each other. If God is having no mind, obviously he can have no will. Then what does it mean when we say that our will must be in consonance with the will of God? God is pure and simple consciousness, and its main characteristic is to remain balanced and be equanimous, or as we understand, being a samavarti. He is by himself nothing and is totally ignorant. When we move towards the center and dwell in that region, it is ignorance that reigns, and knowledge per se is not there. This is also the condition of Sahaja Samadhi, where every action is automatic and there is no premeditated will that works. In the case of human beings, perfect Sahaja Samadhi may be a far-off thing, but in the case of God, that is his natural and permanent condition. This balancedness carries along with it the criteria of rhythm or order. There is an inviolable order in the entire realm of the divine, which includes everything. This is also the nature of nature, and that is why we many times use it as a synonym with that of God. Balance is a condition of nature, and to be in that condition is a call of the commandment 4 of the Master. As human beings, we are evolving towards our immanent and transcendental perfection. We are aspiring towards the infinite while being in the finite. Right now, we feel that this is God's creation, but that God, we think, has his own separate existence. But this feeling is wrong. Just as the soul is inside our body, God is inside his creation. Otherwise, the creation cannot exist. When the soul leaves the body, we will die. Similarly, if God left the creation would also come to an end. God, the infinite, has entered into us, into these finite bodies, which last for a finite number of years. The infinite gets the greatest joy only by making itself finite as well. We have to know, we have to feel, and we have to realize this for ourselves. Only then will we see God in his creation. Otherwise, we will think that God is in heaven, and although we are his creation, we have no connection with him. This is crucial to understand the concept of inherence of the divine in the human and work towards the realization of the divine. This is the basic to understand the concept of Antaryami or Dahara Vidya. That is the reason why we meditate on the divine in the heart. Finite and infinite, according to our outer understanding, are opposites of each other. But in God's eye, they are one. One complements the other. The finite and the infinite always want to go together. The finite wants to reach the absolute, the highest, which is the infinite. The infinite wants to manifest itself in and through the finite. This is what Master has stated, even as mentioned in the sub-paragraphs of Para 2. Without this mutual interdependency, there will be no true joy, no achievement, and no fulfillment. In and through the infinite is singing its song of unity. In and through the finite is singing its song of multiplicity. However, it is essential to note that the finite is always separative and the infinite always integrative. The infinite always includes all the finites, but whether the finites integrate into the infinite is by option of the finite. Master, in his message on unity, stated there is no question of separation. We are coming closer and closer. This is the message for all. This is the crux of spiritual education. President, may kindly note. President, may kindly note. This is the crux of spiritual education. Unity. God is everything, but each person or a finite being has to feel for himself what God is for him. He can be infinite light, infinite consciousness, infinite power, infinite joy, infinite bliss, infinite compassion, infinite strength, infinite knowledge, and infinite energy, and add what you want. It cannot be stressed too often that it is truth of the teaching which is all important, and never the personality of the teacher. This is why Master said that the Master, the method, and the mission are to be relied upon. It is important to remember that the true teacher is the spokesman of the truth. All the Masters, in fact, are the emanation of this truth, appearing in countless skillful, compassionate guises in order to guide us through their teachings back to our true nature. At first then, more important than finding the teacher is making a connection with the truth of the teaching, for it is through making a connection with the truth of the teaching that we discover our living connection with the Master. We need for educating people in this path of grace is paramount. The need for educating people in this path of grace is paramount. This is the logic of the ISRC, as we all know. How can we regain the capacity of grasping the infinite is a question of all serious aspirants. We know our thinking is limited or finite. Our awareness of our existence is narrow and restricted. We seem to understand the need to think broad, but we find it very difficult to do so. We have a glorious mind, and yet we find it difficult to reflect the glory of God. We seem to be not capable of even thinking that our mind is really pure, thanks to our indoctrination into the material and self-centered life patterns. Why is it that people should find it so difficult even to conceive the depth and glory of the nature of mind? Why does it seem to many such an outlandish and improbable idea? The teachings of the Masters speak of four faults which prevent us from realizing the nature of mind. The nature of mind is too close to be recognized. Just as we are unable to see our own face, mind finds it difficult to look into its own nature. It is too profound for us to fathom. We have no idea how deep it could be. If we did, we would have already, to a certain extent, realized it. It is too easy for us to believe than to think. It is too wonderful for us to accommodate. The sheer immensity of it is too vast to fit into our narrow way of thinking. We just cannot believe it, nor can we possibly imagine that enlightenment is the real nature of our minds. When past thought has ceased and a future thought has not yet arisen, during meditation, in that gap, in between, there is a consciousness of the present moment, fresh, virgin, unaltered by even a hair's breadth of concept, a luminous, naked awareness. That is what we experience. Yet, it does not stay in that state forever, because another thought suddenly arises. This is the nature of mind. However, if we do not recognize this thought for what it really is, the very instant it arises, then it will turn into just another ordinary thought as before. This is the cause of delusion and is the root of all bondage. If we are able to recognize the true nature of the thought as soon as it arises and leave it alone without any follow-up, then whatever thoughts that arise all automatically dissolve back into the vast expanse of void, and we feel we are liberated. This is the exact reason why Master asks us to ignore the thoughts during meditation. We, however, know that it is always not that easy to ignore the thoughts that crop up during meditation, and at other times. The answers of Lord Krishna that it is possible to control mind by practice and renunciation is not all that easily practicable for the common man. Here comes the need for help from another person who has controlled the senses and mind. This is what was stated by the Master, as can be seen from the subpara M in para 2 above. The most interesting aspect of this is a finite helping another finite to know the infinite. Thus we start from the finite and move on towards the infinite. The various attitudes and approaches to sadhana have been dealt in detail in our literature, and here we need not go into those details. Most importantly, with this approach we develop one of the noblest qualities, namely humility, which paves the path towards our perfection. Awareness of the various powers in the human frame and utilization of those powers are two different things. The materialistic approach tries to use, misuse and abuse these powers for petty purposes, refusing to acknowledge that those powers are provided to us by nature for the purpose of nature. When we utilize these powers located mostly in the Pindadesh, we become highly isolated and insulated to achieve our wants and desires. But these very centers, when brought under the control of the higher centers, serve the purpose of nature and are of common good. Therefore, there is a need to make this finite Pindadesh glittering first, so that it can be surrendered to the infinite for utilization for global and cosmic good. Master says that research is necessary to know all these things for the common good of mankind. This is an indication of the hard work we need to do in this field of spirituality. In Pindadesh, the logic is of separation and individuation. Separation has been the theme of consciousness on earth for thousands of years. We have separated into tribes, then countries and empires. We have separated or divided ourselves by race, sex and religion. We have even separated our own consciousness further from its source, focusing it firmly in the external world and away from the light within. Intuition and the inner aspects of the five senses have been largely ignored in order to focus upon the game of living, and the game plan has revolved around separation. We have even been separated from the records of our experiences over the countless millennia prior to current recorded history. In this materially focused world of separation, we do not even know who we are as a human race, where we came from, or how we came to be living on this one small planet within the vastness of the universe. For most of today's population, it is just easier to avoid such haunting questions by thinking of ourselves as being alone in the universe. However, even as masters plan and execute, there's a change that allows the human race to set sail in the direction of integration, where we will find answers to these many, to these and many other vital questions. The universal theme that is being played on earth today is shifting from one of separation to one of inner integration. Integration basically means people learning how to love themselves and how to love others. Integration involves a sense of wholeness. An integrated self no longer has the opposing parts which foster the inner tensions that promote a lack of self-love and self-acceptance. Dr. KCV stated, "The integral view severs nothing, annuls nothing. It restores the unity, the divided both in the organic pind as well as the cosmic Brahma. Perhaps it discovers that the organic itself is an inherent form of the cosmic or transcosmic Parabrahman, and as such analogies of the organic are not ungermane to the transcosmic itself." Seven Paths to Wisdom, page 118. Integral wisdom, we should remind ourselves, is not just adding up or a total of all that is, but that is that in which each and every finite has a role to play, which in no way is less significant than the rest. Such wisdom is possible only through the process of coordination and mutuality and love. When people love and accept themselves, they can love and accept others unconditionally. This opens the door for the further development of an inner sense of the connectedness of all life. Other people can then be seen as simply other parts of expressions of the same fundamental infinite being. All people are seen as one with the universe within us, and not something separate that is outside of us. Opposites still exist in a world of integration. The opposite sex, the opposite poles of a battery, the opposite sides of a coin, but these all complement each other rather than causing a sense of division. Our master uses the concept of a magnetic field in a dynamo, where it is the coordinated where it is the coordinated integrative interaction of the opposite poles create the initial impulses for the whole of the universe. This is an area of research that scientists may explore. As our sense of inner integration continues to develop throughout, we find that our previously separate compartments of consciousness begin to join together. The subconscious, conscious and superconscious minds only have to function separately during times when the issue of separation is being explored. But in Pan, since we invoke the influx of the power from the center, which flows down through the different cosmic and universal dimensions located in the human frame and finally reach the heart, the process of integration gets completed. Intuition and conscious telepathy become progressively easier to develop. But purity of intention and dedication to the well-being of the universal are prerequisites for this. Integration by itself a darshana. With it, we see life as a harmonious and complementary variety of thought, feeling and action. Such a complementary, coordinated, cooperative and harmonious feeling among the people, finites, is best called as love. In contrast to the emotional relationship between a man and a woman, divine love is a luminous pool of light and not a beam focused on one object at a time. And that is the basis of all service. Such a service brings us to the feeling expressed by Master that we are united in the common cause, keeping towards proper order the good of man and humanity. Unconditional holistic love is the answer to all of life's challenges. We are here on earth to learn how to meaningfully integrate ourselves with all that is in nature. We are here to accept ourselves and others completely and without judgment. One may ask whether we are supposed to love someone who is determined to be non-loving. The secret here is that there is a difference between an acceptance of the outer belief systems of a person and an acceptance of his inner essence, regardless of that person's outward belief system. And whether we agree with it or not, it is the inner essence of the person that we learn to recognize, love, accept and integrate with. It is such a love of all that is the basis of the prayer that we are asked to make at 9 p.m. The Master's method in this regard reveals a secret that unconditional love will heal the world and there is no shortage of supply. The universe is permeated and held together by the love aspect of the one Master. The universe was created by three fundamental aspects of original consciousness: will, love and action. Love is a medium that fills the entire universe, while the will of the Master holds the universe together within its embrace. Love is not something that we generate. It is something that we allow to flow through us. We have only to allow it to flow in order to experience its wonder. Every part of space, every part of matter, and every part of our being is filled with the love of Master. Master stated that love is the inner awakening to reality. Such an awakening to the reality is possible only through the service to the finite. That is why we are told that we should attempt the finite for the infinite.
Yes.